Support for The Full Story comes from Long Wharf Theater, creating theater of, for, and by the people of Greater New Haven. Everyone's story has a place at Long Wharf. You belong.
Today, our conversation is about hunting and women and the deer population in our region. Welcome to The Full Story on WSHU. I'm Ron Ropiak. Before we get started, I think many are going to want to voice their opinions about today's program. So let me say that you can comment on our Facebook page, which is Full Story WSHU. And if you're not a Facebook user, you can email us. We're at tfs@wshu.org. That's tfs@wshu.org. Now, we've talked about the growing deer population in our region and ticks and Lyme disease and accidents that have taken place when drivers hit deer. But an article in the New York Times the other week caught our eye because it says more and more women in our area are taking up hunting in part to control the deer population and for other reasons, too. The writer of the report, which has gotten so much notoriety, if I can say that, is Charity Roby, who joins us on the line. Charity, welcome. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
What did your research tell you? What did you find?
Well, at a time when there are fewer and fewer traditional hunters, men, going into hunting or first-time hunters, there are more and more non-traditional hunters, especially women, getting involved. And this came to my notice when I live on Shelter Island, and one of the things that we worry a lot about here is how to deal with our deer and tick problems. And our deer and tick committee is always looking for ways to basically recruit more hunters, since that has been the most efficient way of, and you know, most practical way of keeping our huge deer population somewhat under control. And so they started looking at ways to they were interested in this increase in interest in women hunters, and always looking to recruit more hunters, started to look at ways to encourage more women to try to leverage this interest to deal with a serious local problem.
Hmm. How many women are licensed hunters on Long Island, and also how many in New York State?
Well, I guess the best way to characterize it is that up until 15, 20 years ago, the percentage of first-time hunters was pretty much close to zero among women. Now, the number of hunters, women going into hunting, is closer to 15%. So it's a huge increase over time. This comes at a time when there are fewer and fewer men. So the overall number of hunters continues to decline in New York State, on Long Island, and nationwide. But the number of women hunting as a percentage has continued to increase.
Hmm. And are they doing it specifically to hunt deer or for other reasons?
No, they do it for a variety of reasons. And one of the things that I wanted to find out in my reporting is why. Well, you know, why are women going into hunting in greater numbers? And I was surprised. I mean, some of the reasons are the same reasons that, you know, that men used to go into it. Love of nature, they like being outdoors. But what I heard a lot more of from the women I spoke to than I had heard from men, because I've been reporting on hunting for some time, is that food was a very important factor for them, extremely important. And that they're one of the incentives, or one of the sort of relatively recent factors on the East End, is the ease with which, if you actually harvest a deer, shoot a deer, you have support to butcher it and make sure that either you're able to eat it, your family's able to eat it, or if you don't want to eat it, it can be donated. So this is a big factor for women who hunt. And so that was one thing that was kind of surprising to me. And I also found out about a venison distribution center on Shelter Island. There's also a New York State venison distribution system, and they're quite extensive, quite sophisticated, and they distribute a huge amount of deer meat. This I did not know about, and it was very interesting. And it turns out to be a major factor for a lot of the women who are going into hunting. Another important factor is the increase in tick-related disease. This is something that is a huge problem on Long Island and on Shelter Island, and something that is while not caused specifically by deer, is a way of controlling it is to reduce the deer population. So that's another thing that came up in my conversations with women who are going into hunting.
I was reading a number of the comments on the New York Times website in reaction to your story, and this is one of them. It said, I spoke to a deer hunter once from Shelter Island who told me when the deer is skinned, it's crawling with ticks. Ticks equal Lyme disease. I read that and I'm thinking, okay, I don't know if this is true or not. How do we know the meat is safe to eat?
Mm-hmm. So there are one of the people that I interviewed for this piece is a woman named Jackie Arthur, who is one of the butchers who works on Shelter Island. And so here, you can donate your, if you don't want to take it home and butcher it yourself, you can donate it. And from her, I learned a lot about the deer butchering process. And I should also, I think you're going to be talking to Katrina Talbot later.
We are.
So she can also speak to this, because this is another area of training that the DEC offers to men and women, but in the women-led hunter education programs. You have to learn how to butcher deer properly, and the first thing you do is to skin it in such a way that anything on the skin, that the skin does not come in contact with the meat at all. This is just a basic butchering technique. That's just how it's done. There is no threat if this is done properly. Certainly no threat from ingesting a tick. I mean, you're not going to get Lyme disease from eating a tick anyway. You're going to get Lyme disease from being bitten by a tick and leaving it on for long enough. There's a whole process to that. But another concern that people have, and then this writer that you're talking about, they didn't refer to this, but there's also a program on Shelter Island and in some other areas that applies a permethrin, which is a ticksicide, to the necks of deer in an effort to reduce ticks. And correct butchering also prevents any permethrin from getting onto the meat. Again, it's not there. There's been extensive testing of deer meat. This is not found to be a problem. These are things that this writer mentioned, the tick issue, which is not an issue, and you'll also hear concern about permethrin from incorrectly butchered meat.
I only have you for a little over another 2 minutes or so. So with that time that I have left, I have to ask you, what kind of reaction have you received from your report?
Well, I think that hunting culture is something that's very foreign to most people in an urban setting. So most of what I saw and what I've heard has been, I've been extraordinarily and pleasantly surprised at how intelligent and how well educated most of the comments are. I mean, I think it's a difficult thing to understand if you did not grow up on a farm, or if you did not grow up in an area where hunting is allowed. I mean, most of New York, so for instance, Shelter Island, you can't actually hunt deer here with a rifle. You can only use a bow and arrow, or for 1 month you can use a shotgun. In many parts of New York State, you can use a rifle. You can even use a handgun in some parts of New York State to hunt.
I didn't know that.
So it's for people in an urban area, someone living in Staten Island or in Manhattan, it's almost impossible to understand what that means to have the kind of area where hunting would even make sense. So I think given that I've been very gratified really by the response, which has been pretty measured. I think a lot of people understand that if you're looking at moral questions and the morality of shooting a wild animal as opposed to raising an animal or paying someone to raise an animal that will then be killed and that you will then eat, these are not easy questions to grapple with, but that's really what my story encourages people to think about, I guess I would say.
Charity Roby is a writer from Shelter Island, and she's the author of Deer Overpopulation Meets Its Match, Women Who Hunt. You can find it online at the New York Times website. Charity, great reporting. Thank you. Thanks for your time today. I appreciate it. We're going to bring in our next three guests. Katrina Tolbert is a wildlife biologist at the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. And Katrina is the coordinator at Becoming an Outdoors Woman, BOW. Bo. Hey, Katrina, how are you?
Hi, good. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you for coming on. Mike Tessitore is going to be joining us in about 10 minutes from now. He runs Suffolk County Deer Management, and I know Mike is listening, and he's going to be joining us. And before that, we also want to bring in one other guest, Julia Weisenberg. Julia is a hunter who is involved with the town of Shelter Island's hunting program. Julia, welcome.
Hey, Ron, thanks.
Thanks for coming on. I appreciate your time.
Same here.
Julia, I'm going to start with you because I know you're actually going on a hunt in a few minutes from now. So I know you have to get going. And Katrina, I know Katrina also has to get going too. But Julia, how long have you been hunting?
This is actually my first year hunting, 2 years being licensed, just with anything. You know, I'm also a mom and a homeowner, so I have a lot going on with work and so forth. So it kind of took me a while to carve out time. But this is my first year doing it, for seriously.
Why'd you start?
I started because, there's actually nobody else in my family who was a hunter or hunts, but I was kind of brought up on Shelter Island, and we kept to a very outdoors kind of life. My father was an environmentalist and activist, so he always had us outside, and we were just, chopping wood and doing leaves and exploring the nature and looking at wildlife and so forth. So I kind of always liked being outside, and I also felt just really passionately that it was a thing, like a hobby that I always wanted to do. My mother had taken archery in college, and she talked a little bit about it, and she always said it was really enjoyable. And I don't know, it was like a gut instinct that I'd be good at it and I'd enjoy it. But then the second part of it is that I live on Shelter Island, and we do have a very high deer population and issues with tick-borne disease. So I kind of looked at it like it can be a passion and a hobby that I enjoy. I'm outdoors, I'm looking at nature, I'm acting as a conservationist. But then the other part of it is that I want to give service back to my community. So this is a way that I can contribute to that by helping to cull the herd and keep nature more in balance. So I kind of look at it as a passion with service.
Hmm. Can I ask you, because this is your first year, how many have you killed? How many deer?
I haven't gotten one yet, but I'm I'm still hopeful because I have until the end of March. I'm right now I'm under the deer damage permit since the regular season ended on end of January. So I'm hopeful about it. I'm actually taking a break right now because usually this is like when things are quiet, and then I go back out again about like 2:30, 3 o'clock. And so we'll see. Maybe this interview will give me some positive vibes or something.
just one last question for you before we bring in Katrina. Does anybody in your family have Lyme disease?
Yes, my mother, she has since passed on, but she had Lyme disease twice in her life and quite seriously. I mean, my parents both lived here with me on Shelter Island, so, and she contracted it from, you know, being here, being outdoors. And we had to actually have a visiting nurse come and administer IV antibiotics to her, and she was quite ill. Seeing her go through that twice, you know, we've always been very vigilant about ticks and kept ourselves knowledgeable, but I guess that's also always in the back of my mind. I want to do something to actively protect people. But yeah, she did. She did have it twice.
Thank you for sharing that with us. I appreciate that. Katrina is holding on. Katrina Tolbert, as I mentioned, a wildlife biologist at the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. And Katrina is the coordinator at Becoming an Outdoors Woman. Katrina, we're seeing the numbers. More and more women are hunting nowadays. Why is this happening?
Yeah, well, I mean, women have always been a part of hunting. They've hunted since the beginning of time, just like men have, but they just haven't really been recognized for it or encouraged so much to do so as they are now. You know, we're sort of reevaluating gender roles in the home and in life in general, and I think women are finding a lot more freedom to be able to get out there and do this. And, you know, really recently we're seeing a lot of women connect with hunting because the same reasons that I do, you know, they want to contribute to conservation, they want to contribute positively to the environment around them, and they want to put really fresh, clean food on the table for their families. And a lot of women just find it really peaceful to be able to go out into the woods, and the whole act of hunting gives people a lot of peace, and it's a really great outlet to kind of escape from the, you know, perpetually connected world that we live in. So I think it's just being really recognized a lot more that women are actually out there doing this, and they have been for a long time.
So, Katrina, are we talking primarily now about deer or other animals?
Everything in general. I mean, you know, you can hunt, you know, women are big waterfowl hunters, big game hunters, so bear and deer, small game, so rabbits, you know, pheasants, things like that. They all provide a really great, clean, organic, free-range food source for your family.
So I have to ask you, because, you know, this has been an ongoing debate for as many decades as I've been doing talk shows. What about those who say, look, especially when it comes to deer, the population can be controlled without hunting? You know, that there are humane ways.
No,
there are better ways
really
to do it. You don't need to shoot them. I mean, what do you
say?
So,
I mean, when you actually look at the science behind it, there are a lot of ideas that are good in theory, but in practice, they're really not practical and they're not functional. You know, a lot of people throw around the birth control ideas, and science has proven that that is not only insanely expensive, but it also doesn't work on a broad scale to control deer populations, and it's honestly not practical either. So really culling the population in a responsible way is the best way to control wildlife. And, you know, it's carefully managed throughout the state. Each region is managed differently based on how populated it is with people and what the number of deer are. And those numbers are all carefully calculated by our biologists in the game management program. And we take that into account when we offer up hunting opportunities to people.
Hmm. Katrina, stay with us, please. Hold on. I just have one last question to for Julia, because I know she has to get going. Julia, I just want to read one of the quotes from Charity's article in the New York Times, which is from one of the women hunters who said, "On Long Island, we live such a fast-paced life. You can't even drive somewhere without dealing with traffic and frustration. Sitting in a tree lets you disconnect from that." I know it's about hunting, but to me, it sounds almost more like meditation.
It is. You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because what I've been doing, at least this season, I write poetry when I'm hunting, because, as you know, there's a lot of downtime. So you're up there in a tree, and it, you know, it gives us pause to think about things and reflect. And like Katrina just said, it's very calming and relaxing. And I, you know, I work in real estate, and I'm a mom of three. So things are really connected and really busy. And so it's my time to kind of get away and unplug and just observe and feel good and be outside. But I do write poetry, and I find it a form of meditation, is why you said that. But and I hope maybe I'll like bind it up one day and like publish it somewhere. I don't know. I've got at least like 10 done. So,
Julia, I appreciate you coming on with us. Please come back sometime in the future.
Sorry.
Please come back sometime in the future. I know you have to get going, so
you,
that's why I was going to let you go.
Invite. Thank you so much.
Julia Weisenberg, who is a hunter involved with the town of Shelter Island's hunting program. Katrina Tolbert is with us just for one more minute. Katrina, I just have to ask you about those who say, look, I know we had talked about saying, you know, is hunting the right way to control the population? What about the idea of putting in some other animals to restore balance, restore order? Because I've read some comments that say, look, what's wrong with some coyotes? Some have even suggested mountain lions or wolves. I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah, so, I mean, that's sort of a tested and failed mechanism of wildlife management throughout history. We've learned pretty easily that you can't just put one species in expecting it to take care of another species because inevitably there's a cascade of effects that you didn't expect to happen. In all honesty, we don't have habitat for mountain lions and we don't have habitat for wolves. That's why they're not living here anymore. And as far as coyotes go, we do have coyotes in every county of New York State. And, you know, the other side of that argument is that there are some people believe we have too many counties in several or too many coyotes in several counties of New York State. So you can't just expect that, like, one species is going to take care of another, except for us, really. The other problem is a lot of these deer issues, especially when you consider like Shelter Island and Long Island in general, it's a really heavily populated area by people. So saying that you're going to increase the number of predators on the landscape is not really conducive to the lawns and backyards and parks that these deer are actually thriving in. So really the safest way, and if you think about it, humans are a predator on the landscape, so using us to cull the deer is not really any different ethically than using a different predator to do it. Especially, you know, we're using all of the meat. The meat, if you're not consuming it yourself, can always be donated through the venison donation program. And so none of this is going to waste. You know, these animals' lives are not being wasted when they're being culled from the population like this.
Katrina Tolbert is wildlife biologist at the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation and is the coordinator at Becoming an Outdoors Woman. Katrina, thanks. I appreciate it. Come on back sometime, please.
Thank you. I'd love to. Thanks for having me.
Mike Tessitore is going to be with us now for a few minutes. Mike is the founder of Suffolk County Deer Management. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, Ron. How you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate your time today. We know about Suffolk County Deer Management. You're a private company, right?
Yes, sir.
Basically, you help people who are trying to get rid of deer on their property. Is would that be accurate?
Yeah, through bow hunting and specific bow hunting incentive environment training. I'm also the founder and president of Hunters for Deer, which is a 501c3 advocacy group that started the Need a Hunter program in 2013.
Are you seeing more women hunting nowadays?
I mean, we see the same amount of women hunting nowadays. I don't think it's something new. I think it's, you know, something that has come to light and, you know, we support it. What we see in our organization is we get one or two every year and we always see them being successful their first year in the stand as opposed to the men that are in our group, which is pretty funny because not all the men have shot deer in our program the first year, but all of the women have.
Yeah, we were talking to Julia a little bit earlier, and she said she just started a year ago. She hasn't killed a deer yet, but she said she's hoping something like this will happen soon. Can I ask you about the deer population? Is it getting better?
Sure.
Is it getting better or worse nowadays?
We don't have an overpopulation spread out evenly, so we do have pockets of deer, and the biggest issue that we have on Long Island is access to land to hunt. 85% of the land's private. And there's a lot of politics when it comes to deer management. So, you know, we in Suffolk County Deer Management always separate recreational hunting from what we do. We do management hunting. So when you regulate, you know, deer based on fair chase principles or hunting regulations, it gives the animal the advantage. And it makes the hunter not really successful. It doesn't put the odds in their favor.
So is that what you mean when you say a lot of politics?
There's a lot of politics because, like, you know, for crossbows, for instance, Westchester and Long Island, Suffolk County, have been excluded from allowing crossbows to be used during the recreational hunting season, but we can use them on deer damage permits or nuisance permits. Nuisance permitting, in terms of a management hunting style, we're able to hunt at night, use flashlights, hunt over bait, still with archery equipment, and it's more effective. Recreational hunting is not proven to be fully, you know, effective for reducing deer numbers in overpopulation areas. You know, statistically, on Long Island, hunters only kill 10% of the deer population every year through regulated hunting. And that doesn't cover fawn recruitment. You know, to reduce deer numbers, you need to kill 23% of that population just to cover fawn recruitment. So if you're not killing 23% of the deer and hunters through recreational hunting and their management programs are only doing 10%, you know, you're going to see numbers rise. You know, the deer aren't starving to death. You know, we have plenty of property owners that are feeding the deer through the plantings that they put in their yards. So they have the access to the food, and they have pieces of property that are protected either through no hunting, preserved properties. They only allow hiking. They don't allow hunters to access those properties. So biggest thing we have on Long Island is access. That's the issue, and that's what's stopping an effective deer management program.
So if I understand you correctly, even with the hunting, as hunting is now organized and run, even with that in place, not enough deer are being killed, the population will grow.
Absolutely. Think about it. The hunter's a consumer, so they pay for their tags, right? They could shoot, in our region, they can shoot $2 every season. They can have unlimited doe tags. When they shoot a doe, they can fill it and get a bonus tag. But if they're paying for their permit and they're not being given access and their equipment's expensive, they're going to pass on does while in the stand. They're going to only shoot those $2 and then end their season. There's no incentive for hunters, recreational hunters, to be affected. Now, what we do is an incentive for us to be successful and to shoot deer on people's property is access. The property owner trusts in us to give us access, and we reciprocate by shooting the deer that are coming into conflict with them, right? So we get access by doing the right thing for deer management. We're management hunters. Again, we are limited during the recreational season to a sunrise to sunset hunting time, whereas the deer damage permits are really where property owners are going to see significant relief from the deer that are causing conflicts with them.
Mike, just with the 1 minute I have left with you, I have guests from Friends of Animals who are coming on in our last segment. You know,
wonderful.
You know, many have said, look, there are better ways to do this. You don't need to shoot deer. We can control the population other ways. What do you say?
I think, you know, that Friends of Animals and HSUS, who owns the patent to PZP, which is a contraception for deer, I think that, you know, they have a program that they run. All the money that they put towards conservation goes towards billboards to solicit donors. Hunters are the only true conservationists that put their dollars into protecting species and preserving land. So, you know, what do I think about sterilization? It's not effective. It's expensive. And the only reason why they do it is to taint the meat so hunters wouldn't want to eat it. And that's not management. That's being spiteful.
Mike Tessitore, he owns and he runs Suffolk County Deer Management. It's a private archery and training facility that teaches people how to bow hunt in sensitive environments. And they provide licensed deer removal services. And as he mentioned before, he's also president of, it's called Hunters for Deer, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate you coming on again.
Thank you, Ron. Have a great day.
You too. We're continuing the conversation about women and hunting and how to control the deer population. Want to bring in two more guests for our final segment. Priscilla Farrell is the president of Friends of Animals. How are you, Priscilla?
Hi there. Thanks so much.
Good to talk to you again. Haven't talked to you in a long time. Mike Harris is also
with
us.
I know. A million years. And I remember you from WICC, too.
That is
a million years.
A long time ago, Mike. When they said Priscilla Farrell is going to be on, I was like, wow, that takes me back. But anyway, we'll get into that in a second. Mike Harris is the director of Friends of Animals Wildlife Law Program. Hi, Mike. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. Hey, Priscilla, this is going to blow your mind. I remember you and I having a conversation about this some 35 years ago. I'm not exaggerating. It was 35 years ago. And here we are, 2020. So give us your thoughts about what's taking place today regarding hunting and the deer population.
Well, before I start on that, let me say there was a man on with you, a deer hunting proponent, who said that we agreed with a position of HSUS that a chemical sterilant should be used on deer for birth control. That is wrong. We do not. So I'll set the stage with that. But whether we're talking about Connecticut or New York, you've seen over the last, say, decade, a pretty drastic decline in the number of licensed hunters everywhere. I mean, they're down to 5% of residents nationwide. In Connecticut, they represent 1%. New York is about 3%. And women hunters in Connecticut represent 4.4%. So these are really minorities of people, but they have a stranglehold, unfortunately, on wildlife agencies and their policies. And that goes back to how these agencies are funded. And the problem really stems from that, because if there's an excise tax on guns and ammunition, it's the Pittman-Robertson Act of 1937 that allows this, it generates income to the states based on those sales. And the income is used for what they call restoration projects, but those are the deer enhancement projects. So they involve setting intentional forest and marsh fires, or even clear cutting, because if you do the clear cutting, you're opening up the forest floor to some sunlight, and what grows below is that salad bowl, that browse that deer thrive on. So if you're attracting more deer by enhancing the food supply, you're causing that deer population to rise. And that really is the function of every wildlife agency, because if they exist now, as they did 35 years ago, to sell hunting licenses, then they're trying to enhance the targets for hunters. They're not trying to control a deer hunting, a deer population. And the deer hunters will say there's an explosion of deer or an overpopulation of deer, and it's our civic duty or some such nonsense to go out at 5 in the morning with an oiled Remington and say you're starving. You're saving a starving deer from death. But the truth is natural mortality would allow some deer to die of illness and accident and exposure and starvation. And that really does support a Darwinian solution, which is survival of the fittest. We don't have to interfere and say that humans are responsible for the biology of blue jays or deer or mallard ducks or any other such thing. What we have to do is govern our own behavior and to stop thinking that there's a sport in filling an animal full of arrows or bullets. I mean, dismembering a deer and calling it a new gender-like activity for women is really, in my mind, kind of mind-blowing. And to back that up, you've got, I mean, there's a Connecticut bill right now that supports the idea of pink blaze so that more women will be attracted to shoot deer wearing a color that isn't orange, and they sell pink arrows and purple bows. I mean, I get it that with a diminishing number of people electing to hunt, they're trying to recruit females and children. But this is how they're doing it. This is how they're marketing it. And then the Game Commission, in concert with that, will tell you, shucks, we got to do something. The deer are overpopulated. And the truth is, the deer don't have population problems. They have pursuit problems. They have people that find entertainment in stealing their lives and justifying this by the fact that people get Lyme disease or that drivers occasionally hit a deer in the road. If you look at the time of year that those deer are most victims to auto accidents, it's exactly the season that deer hunting prevails. So it's October, November, and December. And we did a survey with insurance companies, which backs this up. If you're moving deer around and you're causing them to flee for their lives, and rather than to kind of hold up as they do in fall and put on fat, you're forcing them out of areas where they're more quiet into roadways. So, you know, the Lyme disease argument, too, pretends that the Lyme disease tick, the black-legged tick, is only interested in one mammal. And in truth, they will look at any mammal as a host, including us, but the animals that we're in closest proximity to really aren't deer. I mean, how many did I bump into this morning on the way to work?
Priscilla, I need to bring in Mike because we only have a limited amount of time in this segment. So I want to give Mike a few moments here. Mike Harris is still with us, the director of Friends of Animals Wildlife Law Program. Mike, thanks for holding on. Your contention is that animals do have rights, right? Is that correct?
Oh, yes. I think that's true.
Okay. I hope this doesn't sound flippant. Do deer have rights?
Yeah, deer have rights. All animals have rights. I think that very few people that seriously understand not only their behavior but how they think and feel would come to some conclusion that animals deserve some sort of right of ethical consideration from humans and not to be treated as inanimate objects.
Is there any place at all for hunting, then, if animals have rights?
You know, I think we're at a point right now where what we're hunting for is for sport and fun. And quite frankly, I don't think there's any room for that. You know, we're not talking about a subsistence society anymore. We're talking about people who are doing this as a type of blood sport. And, you know, as Priscilla mentioned, it is such a small amount of people. It is really quite astonishing that they get any recognition at all. If it wasn't tied into the larger gun rights issue, these people would be not even worthy of this kind of consideration or conversation. I think most people look at what they're doing, killing of animals for sport, and they think it's a horrible thing.
I understand what you're saying, but at the same time, I looked at those numbers from 2018. I mean, 53,000 women in New York State got licenses to hunt. I mean, that's a pretty substantial number, isn't it?
Well, I don't know if I'd call that a substantial number, and I also don't know how many of those people utilize those licenses. Hunting licenses are used for other things like purchasing guns in many states. It's a form of ID for purchasing a gun. So I think it's questionable. I think that the numbers that Priscilla have about actual hunters shows us that we're talking about less than 5% of the population in most states.
Okay. Priscilla, is there any place for hunting?
No. I mean, is there any place for gunning down an animal minding its own business?
The reason I ask is because a number of our guests earlier said, look, the deer population is just spreading. They're everywhere. They're destroying property.
Well,
they're spreading
exploding.
Lyme disease.
What I'm saying is this is propaganda. If you've got a game agency that is supposed to exist to protect the land and the animals we've all co-evolved with, they're pumping out hunting licenses. They're benefiting from the sale of them. This isn't an objective federal or state agency. They have a customer base, and those are the hunters. And the problem is their funding is waning because the number of licensed hunters continues to fall. And it has for the last 25 years. young kids are less likely to want to pick up a gun and go out with dad and make something dead. You know, they're doing computer activities and other kinds of sports. So how do you rescue the hunters? I guess you invent a story that it's in our interest to save the culture and the environment by shooting a deer full of arrows. I mean, it really is ludicrous. And I do understand that stealing the life apparently gives some people some ego strength, but I consider it ludicrous.
Mike, I heard you in the background. I know you want to jump in.
Yeah, you know, I've been doing this type of work for decades now, and you know, one thing that I've seen is that each of these situations, when it comes to population control or population status of wildlife, whether it's deer in the east or elk in the west, where I am in Colorado today, they each have a unique situation. And we used to address it by applying legitimate forms of wildlife biology and ecological solutions. And what we do now is we apply the same solution no matter what the underlying problem might be, and that is to pick up a gun and shoot the animal. What we've seen over the last couple of decades is a drain away from having these agencies staffed with ecologists and biologists and having them staffed instead by people that issue licenses and do just checks and balances on population numbers. These aren't solutions at all. They're not sustainable solutions just to kill animals. There are different ways to handle the population issues in every situation. I know that some of you might be familiar, listeners might be familiar with our work recently at Fire Island. For decades at Fire Island, they addressed the quote unquote deer conflict by educating people within the community and visitors. They took away all that money, and instead they just want to bring in the hunters. We don't have any really, you know, legitimate work to address these issues as they might really present themselves. And it's just one solution, the gun. And it's happening coast to coast. And it is becoming a problem in which that if we're not going to address the underlying problems, you know, you're just sort of just creating this over and over again.
Mike, who took away the money?
Well, the Park Service did, and one reason, for, as Priscilla suggests, is that they would prefer to fund it through hunting licenses and not through taxpayer dollars, which itself is becoming a huge problem because the hunting license revenue isn't keeping up with the need. So you're actually causing yourself to actually have more problems because you don't have the staff because you're relying on a dwindling income source. And the only money that's being used is to promote more hunting.
Priscilla, I only have 3 minutes left. I know we've been talking about hunting overall, but let me just ask you about the deer population. What's the best way to control the population? How do we do it?
I think we have to control our attitudes and be more informed. You know, I don't have a deer population problem. Connecticut doesn't have one. If we had 30,000 deer and we've got 32 state forests, we don't have too many deer. We have more than 3.5 million residents. I'm a gardener. I do have deer come to the yard. I could fence and keep deer out if I wanted to. I don't. There are people that use repellents on some plants if they don't want deer to eat the tulips or some such thing. I'm saying it's a false dichotomy. We don't have to control deer. We have to control ourselves.
Mike, do you have any thoughts about controlling the population, or do you basically agree with what Priscilla said?
I do agree, and I think there's other places where we've just let the balance of nature go so, you know, unchecked that we've don't have any natural populations to control the deer. Those are individual solutions that people don't look at anymore, because we're so focused on this weak argument about hunting that supports such a small number of constituents. And we're not looking at successful stories in our past where we've restored the balance, we've added more predators, we've addressed the human population's impact on the deer and other animals. We've just put all that off the table to cater to such a sort of a self-interested group of people.
Priscilla, I have 1 minute left. Please give us your final thoughts.
I think it's brilliant, really, that you're opening up this conversation to further debate. I think it needs this kind of analysis, and we need to have people who are not part of the 5% who hunt weigh in on whether they think native animals are a problem for their existence, because in truth, they are not.
Mike, I have a little time for final thoughts from you, please.
Well, I completely agree. I'm personally just so disappointed on the direction our wildlife authorities have gone over the last decade or two, and the capture that we've seen of those agencies. And there's so many realistic opportunities to promote wildlife within our neighborhoods and within the public sphere that just go ignored because they've captured the voice here. And I agree with Priscilla. I don't think most people see a problem here. I think who see a problem are the ones who want to do this blood sport and those that are going to profit off of it and keep their agencies alive because no one else, you know, because they've had all their funding taken away. So we need to get back to a more balanced approach to addressing these issues and working with people who actually feel that there are some type of issues that that go on in their neighborhoods or go on in their communities, and get back to some common sense solutions.
Mike Harris, the director of Friends of Animals Wildlife Law Program, and Priscilla Farrell, the president of Friends of Animals. Priscilla, nice to catch up with you. Mike, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
If you want to comment on today's program, email us. We're at tfs@wshu.org. Facebook, we're at Full Story WSHU. And remember, if you missed part of the program, you could stream it or you could download it as a podcast on Google Play, Apple, Stitcher, or Spotify. It's going to do it for our show today. Julie Ferdino is our engineer. Carrie Frank's the digital editor. Our associate producers are Fatou Sangari, who line produced today, Sabrina Garone, Roberto Rojas, Desiree DiOrio. J.D. Allen is the producer, and Terry Sheridan is our news director. Thank you, Fatou. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to you for being part of The Full Story.